Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's show on Health Chatter. It's a real heavy-duty topic. We're going to be looking at medication management, and we're also going to be addressing the question, should we just medicate? In other words, with all the ailments that we have, is it just easier to take a pill and forget everything else? So we'll get into all these logistics with two wonderful guests, which I'll introduce in a couple minutes. We have a great staff that I like to introduce all the time on all our shows. Maddie Levine Wolf, Matthew Campbell, Sheridan Nygaard, and DeAndra Howard, Aaron Collins. They've all been with us since day one doing Health Chatter. They're our background crew that does our background research, our production, transcription of all of our shows on our website. They are a crew that's second to none. And even though some of them live in different cities, they still are connected with us. So thank you to all of you. You're really great. Clarence Jones is my co-host on Health Chatter, and we've been chatting a lot over the years, and we keep doing it. And Dr. Barry Baines is with us. He's our medical advisor for our show, and he brings in the medical perspective on some of these shows that frankly we really need some insight on. So thanks to everybody. Human Partnership is our sponsor for these shows. You can check them out. They're a great community health organization at Human Partnership Alliance.org. Human Partnership Alliance.org. Check them out. They do some really creative things and continue to do them. You can check us out at healthchatterpodcast.com. For all the research, we attach the research that we do, our background research for all these shows. The shows are transcribed, so if you don't want to listen to them, you can read them. So check us out and also provide us with questions if you have any that we could follow up with you. So thanks to everybody. Today, we have Dr. Rhonda Chocolis, she's actually nationally respected pharmacist, has been on our show before. 16 years of experience across clinical practice, pharmacy regulation, community innovation. She has her hands in a variety of different things, and with a really creative bend to it all. And she's a really good community health strategist. And it's really great having you again on Health Chatter. Dr. Aja Jackson is a licensed pharmacist with over 5 years of experience in hospital and specialty pharmacy settings. Beginning her career in acute care in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, even though where she is today is in Sarasota, Florida. So I think she's linked to warm weather. I think that's the key here. A variety of different initiatives that she's involved with, including pharmacogenomics, and also patient outcomes as it relates to drugs and medications. So you guys are second to none. I could frankly, hand off the show and just the rest of us could just be quiet because I'm sure you have great insights. So thanks for being with us on Health Chatter. So, all right. So let me start this thing out. Frankly, in the news, in today's paper, nationally, right? And is makers of obesity drugs are to cut prices so that they can widen coverage and provide obesity drugs easier for patients. Okay, so my question is, first and foremost, they might have been too expensive to begin with, but that's another issue altogether. But what are we dealing with here? Are we dealing with medications that are just easy peasy? Let's just take the drugs and we don't have to worry about anything. And obesity, these obesity drugs are certainly one angle on this. So, Asia and Rhonda, give me your perspective on should we just medicate? When in doubt, just medicate. Forget exercise, forget eating properly. Just take the drug and thank you very much.
I think I'll start, Stan. First of all,
Yeah,
thank
go
you
for
for
it.
that wonderful introduction. And then, because I have my hands in so many things, I have to do my usual disclaimer that none of the things I'm going to talk about represent any of the entities that I either am employed by or affiliated with. And then also, since we were here last time, I got a lot of alphabet on the last part of my name. So it's now Chakolis Hassan. That's kind of been new in the last year. So I got remarried. And yeah, but
Congrats.
I think you bring out an interesting point. So one, let's talk about obesity in general. We know the rates are generally going up. We're actually seeing them in children. African American women also are very increasingly susceptible to obesity, right? And so let's just go with the elephant in the room and talk about those medications you're talking about, the GLP-1s. For a long time, if you think about the history of medicine and how we treat conditions, right, we've been thinking about let's have the magic bullet. So for a while, antibiotics, penicillins, those kind of things, those were our magic bullets. And here we are now with this GLP-1 products that have the magic bullets. First of all, we are forgetting that sometimes medications are intended to treat one thing and have this lovely side effect. And so the GLP-1s are kind of one of those things that really kind of started out as mostly to treat diabetes, but magically had a side effect of weight loss. We have medications like that. Your Viagras and whatever initially started out as blood pressure medicines, and in clinical trials didn't do so well, and they found that they also had a side effect. So here we are, and I think medication is just one small portion of what we're doing. So what we see now, even with the GLP-1s, yes, you will lose weight. However, if you don't look at the behaviors, if you look at the data, people rebound very quickly. It's the same thing that people have had when we initially thought in terms of weight loss that gastric sleeves and gastric bypasses are also the magic bullet. 5 to 10 years out, a lot of patients, if they don't get those behaviors, they've not only gained back the weight that they've lost, but they've even gone back to their baseline. So hopefully that's a good start. I'm interested in what my colleague kind of thinks about GLP-1s, Dr. Jackson.
Yeah, so I do want to piggyback off of what Dr. Chakolis Hassan said and just say thank you for having me on the show. With regard to GLP-1s, I do think they are more so of a quick start, but if you don't address the underlying causes of, eating habits, exercising habits, moving daily, like she's mentioned, once you kind of complete that medication, are likely to rebound because if you haven't changed those habits prior to or while you're on the medication, you're not going to change them once you stop.
So let me ask you, is it a fad drug? As pharmacists, are you concerned that this is a fad?
Me personally, I am a little bit concerned that it's a fad because I've seen patients that actually need the medication for a diabetic diagnosis and they aren't able to get the medication because it's either out of stock, low inventory, things like that. I think once you have one person, be it celebrity, someone you know that has taken a GLP-1, lost all this weight, people are going to their providers and saying, "Hey, my so-and-so is on this. I want to get on it too to lose the weight." So I do think it's a fad. I wish there was more education from providers, from pharmacists, just about the GLP-1s in general to really give patients and people, whether they'll listen or not, really good insight on what they're getting themselves into.
So I'm concerned. This is Clarence. I'm really
Yeah.
concerned about the whole issue around polypharmaceuticals. I mean, here we go. We keep adding and adding and adding. What kind of conversation should we be having about this drug and how it might impact, as Dr. Ronald was talking about, how this might impact the real health of people, either now or in the future. What should we be thinking about?
I think that's a great question, Clarence. First of all, I kind of hinted at it as side effects, right? And now you're starting to hear and see terms like Ozempic face. You're starting to see things, other side effects in terms of even how it's affecting female reproductive anatomy. You're hearing things about vision. You're hearing things about possible thyroid cancer. I think the conversation is, what is health? What is medication? Medication is a tool, as Dr. Jackson said, but when it's not paired with other things, that's where we get into problems. The other thing is, there is nothing that is out there that is without risk. And so a lot of times we're not even having that conversation about what is the risk and the benefits of taking something. There's risk and benefits with anything. And I think because people have this desire to want the quick fix, and again, we all are very aware that TikTok and other platforms have made this be where people are like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing ever. But what we're not hearing about is the people who are being hospitalized because their gastrointestinal system can't handle this medication, or they're having issues with their pancreas, or they're having issues with their vision. We're only looking at the quick fix. And so when we're adding that additional medication, we also need to think about what's being taken away. And so when we talk about weight loss, when I talk to people who are starting this drug, be it for weight loss or diabetes, is it's indiscriminate. So we think about the scale, but are we looking at muscle mass? Are we looking at how loose your skin is? Are we looking at how fast this is? And so the conversation I often have is, yeah, when you're losing weight, your body doesn't know what's fat or muscle. So you got to eat protein. You have to exercise. You have to drink water. You have to incorporate fiber. And so those are the conversations we need to be having, not just about this class of medication, but with any medication.
You know, it's interesting. I was just out east and I was visiting my son and daughter-in-law and grandkids, and I was talking to my daughter-in-law, and we were talking about these drugs, okay? And she said a lot of her friends are on it. And you know what? That really struck me. It's just like, okay, wait a minute. Why are all your friends on it? Okay, and what is it? It seems to me that there's a communication breakdown. Why would physicians put a lot of these people on these drugs? And it's just like, you know, there's a concern that I have from a public health standpoint. Just about this drug. And then, you know, Rhonda, you brought up the idea, okay, well, it's one thing if you take a drug like this. What about all the other drugs that you might be taking? And what might be the interaction with some of these drugs? I'm hoping that certainly the their physicians are aware of that. But going forward, I have a feeling, I might be wrong, but no matter what kind of ailment that we might be dealing with as humans, I have a feeling that we might be headed towards quick fix drugs.
I agree, but I think one thing that we forget is in terms of physician, and I'm talking to a couple of them right here as we're sitting on this show, is those clinical guidelines and FDA indications, right?
Yeah,
And
right.
so physicians have been, like right now, I'm a candidate. I have a BMI over 27. I have a family history of, cardiovascular disease. I guarantee you probably don't want to be in the room with me when I'm sleeping because I snore and have some sleep apnea. So, Even based on clinical guidelines, right? I could walk in and be very much be a candidate for these medicines. Here's the thing: is this the best thing? Is this first line therapy? Sleep apnea? Yeah, maybe I get a CPAP machine and actually use it. Those cardiovascular risk factors that I have in my family, continue to exercise and do different things. And then let's get to the bigger thing, BMI. I have a strong suspicion that we need to really revisit how that's calculated. My waist is under 30, but when I go in to the doctor, like I'm on the obese side, right? And again, we're not looking at those whole things because they're looking at just my height and my weight, not even my muscle mass content or any of those other things. So,
Yeah.
again, I don't want to put doctors in a bad place, but they're only going on like, oh my goodness, this has potential for this. And we've seen this all the time in the pharmaceutical industry. We've seen it with even some of the medications that are used for cholesterol. Well, they have other indications. Some of the medications that are used for mental health, they have other FDA indications. I think the bigger conversation is kind of back to what this show is about. Let's chatter about health. Let's talk about what health actually means.
Yeah. So Barry, okay, I know you have some insight here or some questions. So all right, so
I'm feeling getting
let's
a spark
go.
here. I better say something. But I mean, I think everything here that we're saying is true. And one of the overlaying issues from my perspective is because obesity is so epidemic in our society, and it's multifactorial, as we've covered on, shows in particular for some of our people of color populations that live in areas where there's no nutritious food available, the food deserts. We kind of talked about that. So then you wind up, getting more empty calories, not the protein, not the fiber, not all those good things. But I think you can't get away from, this issue that you have an epidemic of obesity, and it's even worse with younger people today, and some of the older populations. I think there's been a very slight decrease over the past few years in obesity rates. And then you have a disease that's also very prevalent in terms of type 2 diabetes. And then, as Dr. Chakalis Hassan has talked about, the indications for use of GLP-1s has been expanding. And so you wind up getting in a really tough situation where when I was in an active practice working with patients, doing exercise and eating right is it sounds easy, but behaviorally it's very difficult. And part of it is actually genetic, not from the standpoint that obesity is genetic. But the human species was always driven that you're always on the edge of starvation, and in caveman and cavewoman times. And if food was available, you just eat as much as you can and build up your fat reserves because you know it's going to happen. And our genetics haven't changed with that. So we're sort of at a very deep level. The idea of exercise and good nutrition is not easy to follow. And so this idea of the magic pill, the blockbuster, medications that come out, this has had a significant impact. But I kind of in Dr. Jackson's corner here, because as soon as you go off the medication, if you don't do these other things, the weight will just come back. And so, you sort of get yourself in a corner of how best can you handle this. So now my understanding is they're trying to develop some GLP-1s where that you're not having to take it forever in order to keep your weight off, that there are some medications that might be coming out where, well, you can taper and you can still keep the weight off. But again, it has to be paired with lifestyle changes. And no one has a magic bullet for that. In other words, what is going to be the thing that's going to really help people to do that? And I think people get isolated with that they think they're all alone with trying to do that. And kind of from my perspective, I think there has to be a more, from a public health perspective, a community effort that if you can do this with other people, it's easier. Okay. I mean, I exercise. I have a BMI problem also, but Dr. Chocolate Hassan, I don't know if you have this problem, but every time I step on not only the scale, but when they measure how tall I am, I seem to be getting shorter. And so even though my weight is the same, my BMI is going up. So I agree with you that we need a better way to calculate BMI. But I think it's one of the solutions is community-based efforts rather than just trying to pound on people for eat right and exercise and things like that, because everybody's busy. Certainly in Minnesota, not in Sarasota, but in Minnesota, going outside to exercise, probably starting tomorrow, we're supposed to get some snow. That's dangerous too, because I think we're going to probably talk a little bit about polypharmacy and the problem that gets into with falls and stuff like that, if you don't understand the interactions with all the medications. And then the one last thing, and then hopefully I'm answering the questions okay here. Has to do with the explosion in pharmaceuticals. I go back to when I was in medical school, and within a few years of graduating medical school, the number of drugs that were out had like tripled or quadrupled. And again, we're talking about medical school for me was 50 years ago. And it just seems every day more and more medications, come out. And drug interactions. I remember my first pharmacology lecture. The first thing the professor said was, just remember, all drugs are poisons. You watch these commercials and it seems that it talks about all these great things. And then they go through this list for like 30 seconds of all the side effects of medications. Right. And they say, oh my God, do I really want to take that? Because all of these side effects are extremely problematic. And that doesn't even get into the drug interactions. It used to be, there were just a few drugs where there were interactions. Now it's just about everything. And I know that there are some apps online where you can put in your drugs and, kind of red flag the ones that are, particularly problematic, because there's no way you can memorize all this stuff. And unless you have a PharmD next to you, which is always a good thing.
Right. So let me ask a couple questions here.
With those kind of things, it's just impossible to, to keep up from a physician-patient relationship. So has to be partnership with patients, has to be a partnership in the community, and we just have to keep thinking about what to do. But, realistically, people look for the convenience of the, just take the medication and it's the magic pill and you lose weight. And with the GLP-1s, people are losing a lot of weight. So
let me ask this. Seems to me that there's this whole cadre of variables that we're dealing with here. So I'll just list out that kind of what's coming to my mind here as everybody's talking. One is cost, just in general about drugs, and I'll back up on this. And there's access, health insurance, which I can talk about that. Orphan drugs. Okay. I mean, in other words, it's one thing, these, I'll just call them, for lack of a better term right now, these fad drugs. But what about orphan drugs, where people really need them, but their cost is astronomical. And then the real question underlying all of this is, from your perspectives, what does the public need to know? So let's back up a little bit here. Let's talk about costs. I mean, you guys have been in the field, the two of you have been in this field for a while now. What do you think? Do you think cost is really kind of a driver for a lot of these the problems that we're dealing with as it relates to medications?
I would like to go back to just one thing and kind of pick on my colleague here, or your colleague here, Mr. Clarence Jones. One thing is informing people about things. So, for example, I know he is very active in the community and helping people understand their medications, and really, in particular, with the GLP-1s, I know he has started to do some work that GLP-1 is in your body naturally. There's a mind, gut, body connection. And so, really, I know some of the work he's been doing is really talking to people about protein, healthy fats, fiber, fermented foods, and timing. GLP-1, that mechanism of action, is actually naturally in your body. And so, when you kind of pair that with the natural things in the medication, you'll probably get results, or even looking at how do you capitalize on that natural effect. In terms of you said something that I was very passionate about. In my pharmacy studies, I did a lot of research or information around cost and orphan drugs, right? Again, we need to understand too the cost of research. We haven't really had a whole lot of good data surrounding that. People will say that, it's millions of dollars to get a drug from pipeline in the pipeline to patient. But again, there's all of these different mechanisms that people can do to get them there. So, for example, GLP-1s are not anything new. They've been around for decades. There just has been a market for them and increasing them. Again, we don't really necessarily have a good understanding about the structure and financing of healthcare in the United States. Kind of going back to those commercials, we are one of two places in the world where people or pharmaceutical companies can actually advertise directly to consumers. It's here in New Zealand. That should tell you a lot. So what is cost? And so I think sometimes I would love to work with colleagues to one, help people understand how things get from the lab to you in a prescription bottle or at the pharmacy, or even a better thing, what influences the cost for the individual in order for them to get that medication? Are they insured versus uninsured? Do they have a preferred pharmacy? And now, in particular, what we're seeing with these GLP-1 products, the pharmaceutical companies dropping the cost to get them to consumers, that eliminates some of those barriers, right? Because again, the ideal is we have to accept that a lot of times, even though it's health, there's still a cost. And a lot of times, in terms of some of the institutions we deal with, they're businesses. So these things aren't given away.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Clarence.
I'd like to ask the question, Dr. Jackson. You talked about pharmacogenetics or genomics or whatever. I'm not a pharmacist, so whatever I
Okay.
say, okay.
Yeah.
Whatever I say is okay, okay?
Okay.
But I think you know that. Tell us about that, I mean, as it relates to this conversation.
Yeah, so actually, GLP-1s are one of the medications that we are looking up to adding to our program. The program that I'm building is fairly new, but basically, pharmacogenomics looks at the study of how your body metabolizes or breaks down certain medications depending on the pathway. So, depending on how fast or slow of a metabolizer you are, that can be an indication of if this medication will work for you or not. A lot of the informational for pharmacogenomics is informational, but it gives you good insight on, okay, if I take this medicine, if I am, for example, a poor metabolizer is one of the categories. If I'm a poor metabolizer, I know this medication is going to stay in my body a lot longer than someone that's a normal metabolizer, increasing my risk of side effects. With GLP-1s, it's still kind of something that's new, but it's a good indication of, okay, If a patient is taking this GLP-1, what kind of metabolizer are they, and what effect will that have on them either having success or adverse events, not having success at all on this medication?
All right, so I got to talk about health insurance a little bit here. For those of us who are a little on the older side, we have this open enrollment period, for health insurance. All right, just stay with me for a second here. All right. So yesterday, I'm talking to my health insurance agent who helps, to decide which health plan I should be on. And guess what? One of the key questions that he asked me was this: Stan, what medications are you on? So I tell him that, the medications, so I'm on a thyroid medication and I'm on a statin medication, et cetera. His response when I told him the medications was this: Oh, okay, that one's generic, you're okay. Okay, that one's generic, you're okay. All right, that one, da 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 da. Okay, all right. So, to be honest with you, I'm okay with that, and because that way, when I go to my pharmacy, everything is copacetic, right? But what if they aren't? What if they aren't generic? Okay. And what's underlying all of this is confusion, cost, which we've kind of talked about already, but this whole thing of linking the medications that you are on or you need with health insurance. Right. So, all right. So give me your, Dr. Jackson, give me your say. I mean, she's smiling. I can see that.
Because this is
Cause
right
I,
up my alley right
all
here.
right. Okay. So go for it.
Yeah, so I've worked on the PBM, which is the pharmacy benefit manager side of pharmacy.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at medications, it is a lot cheaper for the health plan to get you on a generic medication. It's like pennies versus thousands of dollars to say for generic versus a brand name. A lot of these pharmacy benefit managers have formularies. So, going looking into access of the drug, if that medication isn't on the formulary that your insurance is under, they're going to want you to try one of their medications first that is on that formulary before they give the okay or, kind of hound your doctor on why this non-formulary medication is good for you and why they should cover it. My perspective is I just also wish a lot of patients knew that with certain medications, I'm in the specialty background. So a lot of medications, they do have funding for patients. They do have help. So I know a lot of, people are prescribed on these medications and they're like, oh my goodness, how am I going to afford that? And my recommendation would be go on to the manufacturer's website, look up the medication, and there are tabs on there that says like financial support and see what you have to do. Because, sometimes these patients do need these medications, but sometimes insurance makes it hard for them. Sometimes financially it becomes hard for them, but I do want to let them know like you have ways to get that med.
So I'll give a perfect illustration. So I'm on a thyroid medication, and when I first started out on it, I needed to be, and you two will recognize this, I needed to be on Synthroid, which at the time, all right? Because the generic was not metabolized in my system the same way that Synthroid was. So blah blah blah, and guess what? That was more expensive. Then fast forward, at one point my physician says to me, Stan, let's try the generic. and I want you to come back to me in, in 3 months to see if, it's working. Well, it turns out that the generic now is basically the same as Synthroid after, the 17 years of whatever it is, to that they have. So now I'm on the generic. Okay. So what I'm saying is that I was able to handle that. I'm not so sure that everybody could handle that distinction. Okay. It really can get confusing. And on one hand, the confusion, when you're also dealing with health issues, on the other hand, it really creates angst. So help me out here by talking about angst and safety.
Great questions and great examples. I think it goes back to what I was talking about, the rules of engagement. And
Right.
so understanding where your plan is, because there are rules that govern different plans based on where you're at in life. So, for example, when you work for an employer, you have employer-sponsored insurance or commercial insurance. Those rules allow you to tap into patient assistance programs. They have different pathways. The other thing is you have those rules for state-funded Medicaid plans, right? Those plans have different rules. They have preferred pharmacies. They have different formularies. And then you have Medicare or Medicare Advantage. Those plans have different rules, don't allow you to get patient assistance programs. Different things. What really needs to happen is we really need to have some patient organizations and again, really not even writing them, literally creating 2 or 3 minute segments so that people can understand how to navigate the healthcare system. It's very different if you don't understand the rules, you can't even play. And
Exactly.
so that is the problem. And then when the rules change as your life changes, those rules that apply to you before, if you don't understand the rules, you can't play and you can't navigate those things. I would really, really like to see that happen. I'm happy to collaborate. I'm throwing that out there with people who would be looking to do that. The problem is getting somebody to say, hey, I'm willing to invest with that. I think this would be a great research project going down in the future, saying, hey, we've armed patient with this data dictionary or how to navigate things. Let's see how it's reduced costs, eliminated barriers to medications, and improved health outcomes. And so I think that is what's missing is because those costs, those rules, the co-pays, the pharmacies you use, depending on what segment you have, changes. So, like now for Medicare Part D members, they have this maximum of $2,000 out of pocket max for the calendar year. Well, now that's kind of maybe upsetting some PBMs and different things because what's going to happen is it doesn't matter once people get to those $2,000, it's going to be covered. However, people who have Medicare and have these expensive drugs aren't told is when that comes up at the beginning of the year is historically you might have had a copay. Now what's happening is they want more of that cost sharing on the front end. So a drug that might have cost you $35 because of a copay, when you come to the pharmacy in 2026, it might be $700.
Exactly.
There's another tool in there. That if you're going to get to that 2000, who would have ever thought that we would have come to a place in the world where you actually make payment plans for your medication? And so you actually can get a payment plan with your insurance company if you're on Medicare, if you know you're going to get to that $2000 out of pocket max.
Here's something that I think is vitally important for the public. Let's say you go to the to a physician, you're checking with your doc, and you're diagnosed with something. Like all of a sudden, you walk in, and guess what? You're diabetic. Boom. It's like this shock wave comes over you, and you can just imagine as a patient, you say, "Well, now what the hell? Now, you know, how do I even start navigating everything that I need going forward, given the immediacy of the situation? And I think from a public health perspective, that puts a lot of people over the edge, really over the edge. And as much guidance and as many tools as there might be out there, I'm not sure it matters, because I think people at that point get scared.
I think so often we talk about the burden of care for the patients, but I also like to tell people there's a burden of knowledge for providers. So, for example, you come in, you have 15 minutes to diagnose somebody, their world has changed. It's assumed that you know what's formulary, you know what their preferred pharmacy is, you know if their pharmacy is even open on the weekends. And a lot of that we have to kind of put back in the lap of those patients. So, like, I think the most phenomenal thing about being a pharmacist and practicing in community, and when I'm working with students and other professionals, in the pharmacy, I get to see all the social drivers and determinants of health play out in real time. And it's really interesting as you help navigate people, you know, navigate these things. The thing is that what becomes a problem is we can have all this navigation, but how do we pay for it? And so I think we would be able to pay for it in ways where people don't. There's data out there that people who get a prior authorization for a prescription, 75 to 80% of them never pick it up because of the barriers. We got to start looking at things for from a different view. I think the view is been what happens when we do something. Well, now we need to shift it and say what happens when we don't do something, when we don't care people or arm them with knowledge of their healthcare system and how to navigate it. We're seeing these increased expenditures. We're seeing this frustration and even how we diagnose things with people, right? So you think about diabetes, big thing in my family. We went from normalizing diabetes to normalizing amputations and dialysis in my family, right? And so it's because how people receive that diagnosis. The diagnosis can be life-changing. Are we pairing people with a diabetic educator? Are we pairing people with different things that can help soften that blow? And so I think we're at a wonderful time in our system to say, yeah, we've tried it this way. We've done it this way for so long. We're not getting the outcomes that we want. Let's look at kind of shifting the model and the way we do things.
I just want to piggyback off of that. I think that's a good
Yeah.
segue to talk a little bit more about pharmacogenomics, right? Because pharmacogenomics looks at more so individualized medication. So, again, I say patients should advocate for themselves and really kind of talk with their doctor and ask the questions that they need to ask. But also, I think a lot of providers, when they diagnose a patient with, say, diabetes or high blood pressure or high cholesterol, they go by the book and say, okay, this is first line therapy. Let me put you on this. And sometimes that therapy does not work for the patient. The patient has terrible side effects. So if the patient has done a pharmacogenomic study and they say, well, actually, doc, that medication does not work well for me. My body doesn't clear that out good enough. These are the medications that were a pharmacist recommended, or here's the list of medications for high cholesterol or high blood pressure that show work better for me. I think that would help a lot of patients also and cut costs down because now they're not wasting money on trying all of these different medications and nothing's working. And now they're going back to the doctor and back to the pharmacy. It's like that flip-flop sometimes.
You know, I there's another pharmacy related issue that patients deal with. So, for instance, you know, I've mentioned on this show before that, you know, I see patients right after they've come out of knee surgery, and you know, I give them some guidance based on somebody who's gone through it myself. And they're taking medications now for pain management. Now, these are not going to be long-term types of medications. They're going to take it for, maybe a couple weeks or so. On the other hand, there are medications that people take that they have to take for the rest of their lives. Okay. So, like for instance, if I were a knee replacement patient today, yes, I would be on Dilaudid or Oxy or whatever to manage pain. On the other hand, I'm also taking my thyroid medication that I have to take every single day, frankly, for the rest of my life. So we get into these medication management aspects on a daily basis versus things that come up in people's lives health-wise that frankly they have to take medications for that can put things out of whack a little bit drug-wise. So just insights into that.
Yeah, I think Dr. Berry had his hand up. He wanted to.
Yeah,
You
I
want to
did want to
respond
just
real quick.
follow up with that too with Dr. Jackson on the pharmacogenomics. How, because that's very important, I think, what you were talking about with people getting medications that are not going to be as effective. Can you just mention how easy is it to get pharmacogenomic testing? And where does that fit into things? I mean, I could see it for for chronic diseases like high blood pressure, hypercholesterolemia, diabetes, certainly there's a host of them. But from a practically, how do we get that done? And what does the landscape look like when you look in your crystal ball for pharmacogenomics? Because it's very fascinating to me and really makes sense, as you get a drug for you that will work for you.
So for the program that I'm building, it's a benefit through the members' insurance. Usually it's that way. I know there are some consumers that do have kind of like Ancestry. They'll do like a pharmacogenomics. You can do it that way, but a lot of it is through your insurance. So for patients interested, I would reach out to my insurance and say, "Hey, I've heard about this thing called pharmacogenomics or gene study. Can you tell me a little bit more on how I can get that done or the coverage for that?" Usually some programs do have a physician that's already like contracted. So usually all they have to do is sign up and it's usually like a cheek swab or a saliva sample. And then a pharmacist would actually go over the results with the member and explain everything that's going on. And then I've seen where if a patient wants to, they can have those results sent over to the provider and a report done by the pharmacist sent to
And
the
so
provider.
they could look at multiple medications with that one swab. So you can get like a panel, as it were, of medications that would be good for you or ones to avoid because it's not going to do much for you.
So as long as is data for that pathway for different medications and it's on that labs or that testing site's panel, those medications will be added. So it's a plethora of medications
Wow,
that we
that's
look
great.
at. Even going to Stan's point about pain meds, like pain medications are one of the main pathways that we look at because of the way they're metabolized. So that's usually always on the report whether or not codeine is good for a patient or not. So that can help. Like for me, example, I've done it just as a guinea pig, and I can't take codeine. Codeine's not good for me. I might have adverse reactions or bad side effects because it builds up in my system. So now when I go to the dentist or the doctor, I know, please don't put me on anything with codeine in it.
Also, I wanted to piggyback on that. In Minnesota, they have a legislation that actually pays for that. I think one of the things is a knowledge gap with providers and where to get that done. North Carolina has done some phenomenal work in terms of blood pressure, but also even with mental health medications. SSRIs, atypical antipsychotics, there is the information out there. I think it's really about people not knowing, and then again, navigating that payer system. When you don't know something, you can't navigate it. I've had several patients in the community that I've worked with. I had them go back and ask for their doctor, and their doctor says, "Oh no, absolutely, this isn't being done." Well, I have them hand them this piece of paper, and they say, "Oh wow, I never knew about that." And I think it kind of goes back to how we see clinical guidelines for so long. I started in the area of practice where we had race-based calculations or race-based clinical algorithms. We all know now, with the information that's out there, that that is completely not needed. But we actually have something because, you know, people in the sciences love algorithms and different things. We really have the opportunity to say, hey, this is Dr. Chakola Sasan. She's an ultra rapid metabolizer of narcotics, which I am. So, like, if I take pain medicine, you might as well just almost not give it to me because it's not going to really do anything for me. So, I just tell them, like, hey, give me some propranolol and maybe some Benadryl and put me out. And then that's what works for me. So, we have the opportunity to kind of revolutionize these things. That we hadn't had before. It really is about, again, going back to that system, arming people with the information. And even, like I said, that burden of knowledge on providers. Providers don't know what they don't know, especially when you have so much to do in 15 minutes or less. And then you have also, you know, performance things like, did you offer a flu shot? Did you do this? Did they do this? And then so, like, again, really just making sure that we, close that knowledge gap for consumers and providers.
So, all right, I think we'd be remiss to not ask this one question, although this is a loaded question, which would probably be a totally new show altogether. But the political environment right now and how it's affecting people's knowledge and anxiety and information exchange around medication. So, all right. From your perspective as pharmacists and as researchers and as community people, tell me what you think about all the stuff that's kind of going around us politically.
I think wonderful question. This is an area of opportunity. Again, now in this era of information, right, we have places that are instituting transparent price pan transparency. So for a while in Minnesota, when I first started practicing, it was illegal for me to tell you if the medication was cheaper via cash versus running it through your insurance. We see that
Wow.
now. Yeah, it used to be illegal. We see that now where people are able to say, well, you know what? As long as I don't have state insurance, this mental health medication is costing me $300. If I use my insurance, I'm never going to get to my $6,000 deductible. I'm going to use GoodRx, and that same medication might be $40. And again, so it's about understanding how things work. I am just old enough to remember before Medicare Part D started. I remember my grandparents and my grandfather had rheumatoid arthritis. He had expensive medications. I also remember talking to my parents and saying, hey, you know what? You're going to want to be involved in this now. You're going to want to understand the structure and financing of this. You're going to want to know. And at the time, they didn't. And then now we have these expensive drugs and what have you. Again, there are a lot of variables we can't control. We can't control, like, a lot of the politics, but the information is what it is. And so
Right.
this is the time where we can start saying, hey, irrespective of politics, tell me how my benefits actually work. Tell me what a pharmacy benefit manager actually is. Tell me what a rebate means when my pharmacy benefit manager company actually gets money back from a drug manufacturer to put things on formulary. Tell me how they negotiate pricing. Tell me if it's even worth me having prescription drug coverage, because right now I take generic medications and I'm never going to get to the $2,000 out of pocket max. Am I paying for other people when I don't really use this benefit? And so I think while we can't navigate the politics, we can navigate like autonomy. And so even when it comes down to vaccination and different things, it's really going back, and I hate to say old school, when my doctor had time to talk to me and help develop an individualized approach. Now, with pharmacogenomics from a medication perspective, we have that. But again, area of opportunity. I would love to be involved in some of those policy things because, again, if you don't understand the rules, you don't know what's happening.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree
All
with
right.
what Dr. Rhonda said real quick. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's an area of opportunity for patients to ask questions. Like, if you see something and you don't understand it, go to your local pharmacist, go to your doctor and say, "Hey, I saw this on TV. I know you're the drug expert. I know you have your, whatever, and tell me what is really the actual what's facts," right? Instead of just believing it, just kind of it's a gateway to say, have that conversation where we're educating and really allowing the public to get the ins and outs of healthcare.
All right. Incredible conversation here. Incredible chat. And incredibly useful for our audience. And so I greatly appreciate your insights. So let's do a quick round robin here. Barry, last thoughts.
Pharmacogenomics, I wish I had access to that when I was in practice. And I just want to, I don't know, double piggyback on what Dr. Rhonda and Dr. Aija were talking about with the ideas that the information, that quite honestly, it's not the physician. We can't, it's just too much. The pharmacist is really going to be a prime educator. And I'm glad that a lot of pharmacy folks are stepping up to do that because that is something very needed.
Yeah.
Again, we whenever I get in a room with pharmacists, I could just like talk for hours and hours because the stuff is so fascinating. And I learn a lot. Like I say, the word of the day for me is pharmacogenomics. And thank you for bringing
Yeah.
that up. It was
You're Dr.
welcome.
Jackson, last thoughts.
To advocate for yourself. Advocate for yourself. Really, if you don't know something, don't be afraid to ask the question. Don't just, if a doctor prescribes you something, don't just go with it. Ask them that question or ask the pharmacist that question. But really advocate for yourself.
Dr. Chakolis Hassan,
I have a
thanks for
better.
being here not, for the second show. Go ahead.
Replicate. Replicate what's working. Organizations like Human Partnership, these conversations that we're having, we're able to do things in real time, and we
Yeah.
don't have to wait 10 years for clinical guidelines to change. And by the time we get them, they'll be outdated. So the thing is, replicate. So often we want to come in and innovate, but innovation's great. But if you have something that's working and adaptable, definitely replicate.
Clarence.
I think we need an FAQ list. But because I think that, well, the information that, I think the information that was presented today is so informative and it gives people the opportunity to enter the question. I mean, Dr. Rhonda was talking about, questions that you should be asking. We need to have a list or a place where we can go find it. And hopefully we'll put this on our health chatter listening as well. But that to me was like, oh, okay. How these are the questions that we need to be asking for this particular situation.
I can't agree more. So I'd be remiss not to focus my last comments on some research and some ideas that our research team came up. Tips for managing your medications. quickly. Take your medication as directed. Keep it organized. Take your medication even if you don't have noticeable symptoms. Tell your healthcare professionals, whether it's your physician or your pharmacist, about all the medications you're taking. Make sure your healthcare professionals know about any supplements that you might be taking. Be aware of any food interactions, and also keep tabs of side effects. So these are things, if you keep it in your psyche, it's important. You guys are second to none. I greatly, greatly appreciate your insights. To our listening audience out in Health Chatter land, we got some really, really interesting shows coming up. We're going to have a show on autism. We're going to be looking at, hopefully, health insurance. Imagine that as a topic. I mean, but we're going to be looking at community engagement. We're going to be looking at pet health, health for your pets, okay, which is also kind of, so some wonderful, wonderful shows coming up. Stay tuned on all of them. And to all of you out in Health Chatterland, keep health chatting away.